You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Welcome, friends. It's really good to be with you all here. So, does anybody here live in community? What does that mean? Well, maybe we're going to find out. But a few wee hands are going up. Anybody here interested in living in community or what that means? And I assume you've all got your hands up because that's maybe why you are here. Or you might just be here to get out of the rain. And if that is the case, well, you are still welcome. Today, our session is all about community. What does it mean to live and be in community? My name is Fidge and I'm a member of the Iona community. And at the moment, I'm also a trustee of the Iona community. And here on my right, I have a lovely collection of people who are part of our community. So our community is made up of members, of associate members, of friends, all of which you'll be hearing about, and we would want to encourage you to become one of those people. But we also have, our community is made up of children, our community is made up of young adults, our community is made up of staff, some of who work on the Abbey. Who's been to Iona Abbey? Woo! Loads of people. So you might have met some of these people and some members of the community. And all of these folks are going to talk about their experience of community. But all of that is going to be hosted and led by our leader of the Iona community, Ruth Harvey, who I'm going to hand over to now. A big round of applause.
God welcomes all, strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends.
God welcomes all, strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends.
Quietly.
God welcomes all, strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends.
Thank you, friends. My name's Ruth. I work for the Iona community as the leader. Is this okay? And I'm a member of the Iona community also. And this is a session about marmalade and bread. So hands up if you've brought any marmalade. Oh, I haven't even brought any marmalade. I know some folks have brought bread. The imagery there is we live together in community, whether gathered at Iona Abbey or whether scattered throughout the globe as a member. And we do ordinary stuff, which means we eat together, hence the marmalade. So that is why I am delighted to affirm what Fidge said. On my right, there are a whole host of members and parts of the Iona community, folks who are involved in the Iona community, and we're going to hear from those folks in a minute. But before we do that, I wanted first to sing with you and to acknowledge God's presence here as we all here are friends and strangers. Whatever has brought you here, we are here together in this community for this period. And so what is community? It's when God's people, Christian community for me, is when God's people gather intentionally to consider what it is ours to do now. And then we take collective actions out of that. And together we change the world. It happens all over the place. We have a bit of a thread which we repeat regularly. The Iona community is not unique. Others in here are parts of other communities. Anybody involved with Corrimila or Agape or Teze or Northumbria community, multiple Athona, Pilsden, they have stalls down there. Great! Hi! but we are particular. So Pilsden has a very particular story, an incarnational story, and you can ask them about that story and they will tell you. They probably all know exactly what their founding story. We have a very particular story, but we're not unique. We don't claim uniqueness, but we do claim particularity, and that's what we're here to share a little bit about. And we'd like to hear, what is your particularity? Why are you here? What is it about the marmalade thing and the blurb that brought you here? So would you indulge me by simply reflecting on that for a second in your head or a few seconds and turning to somebody, maybe someone you don't know so well, and sharing just briefly, What is it that brought you to this session? And then I'm going to hear a little bit, just a few snippets of from all of you, because it'd be really helpful for us, before we start speaking, to hear what it is you want to know about, why you're here. So would you just turn to your neighbours, share what is it that brought you here and what is it you're curious about or want to offer in terms of community, and then we'll hear a bit of feedback. And I'll sing to bring us back. God welcomes all, strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends. God welcomes all, strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends. We'd love to hear just a few voices from those conversations, if you're willing to share with us what brought you here and what is it about community that intrigues you. Fidge has the roving mic. You might have to come towards it.
Anybody questions? Oh, here we go.
Ultimately, like, my heart calls out for community. We live in a world that's really disconnected. And actually, for people to be healthy and whole, what we need is people to be more connected and feel accepted. And I think community is a great place to create those safe spaces for people to feel really accepted. And like, my ultimate dream is to like buy a huge house and have lots of people come and live with me. Buy a huge house and yes, like have lots of people come and live with me.
Yes.
And I understand that that's messy, but it's also beautiful.
Community is messy. What was your name?
Iona.
Iona.
10 out of 10 for this one at the front, I tell you.
That's a beautiful name. I would love to. The Iona community. I'd love to be somebody called Mull in one of these gatherings. Iona, thank you. I'm just going to take some notes as you speak. So please do introduce yourself. Thank you so much. So the need for connection is such a powerful rift in our world, and you're looking for folks to share a big house with, or somebody who's got a big house to give it to you, and then you can. Okay. And then, okay. Another couple of voices. I'm just taking some notes on my phone. I'm not being distracted by social media.
I was just wondering about, I'm autistic, and I know the idea of living with people with weird habits and, well, normal habits. And I was just wondering how an autistic person manages that and time out and stuff like that.
Yeah. Thank you, Sadie. Yeah. We'll look at that. Yeah. Thank you. Any other?
Oh, we're coming round here. Could you pass the mic along?
Just give us your name.
Thank you. My name is Kiara, and I live in central London. And as a young professional, I feel like it's probably not uniquely, but quite isolated. So building off what Iona said, I think that sense of connection, but also that sense of intergenerational family outside of church community. It's actually very rare that I will interact with someone of a different generation to me. Mm. And so that's something that's really important. And the other thing is kind of faith, living with other people,
yes,
who share,
yeah,
my values.
Yes.
I live with flatmates. I try and build community a lot, and that's brilliant in so many ways. But we don't have the same values, and that's, yeah, great in many ways, but it also does have some drawbacks as well.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kiara.
My name's Claire, and my question, I suppose, or the thing I've been thinking about, is community is massively important, but some of the most supportive communities I've belonged to, there is a risk that the reason they're supportive is they're insular. So it's how you, I guess my question is how we create community where you don't end up doing it by making it a club,
yeah,
with people on the outside, but also how you then democratize it so that you don't end up with a community where it's one set of people making the decision about who joins and if they like them or they fit. I don't think there's a tidy answer, but that's what I've been thinking about.
There is nothing tidy about community, and what we are discovering is if you try and tidy it up too much, you actually are in danger of losing the very essence of what exactly you are looking for. And there's something about the chaos that's necessary in creation. And have you heard about the chaotic path? the path from chaos to order. It's a mediation tool. And being able to live within the chaotic mess in the middle is a gift, I think, that we in community can offer into the world, where you can you reach for order enough to make sense of community, but you don't move so far away from the chaos that you've lost the essence of creation. So I think there's something for us to learn there, but thank you. I mean, it's not that we're going to answer these questions, but I'm just briefing my team over here that these are the kinds of threads that we're looking for some wisdom on. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Denise. I go to a Methodist church in St. Albans. We are very focused on the fact that we have a relational God. So God is in relationship with himself effectively, and so from that comes the fact that human beings need to live in community, in relationship, to be healthy. I'm particularly involved with a movement called the Anna Chaplaincy, where we work with older people. Yes. In community, and the isolation that many older or less able people feel by living on their own is enormous, and yep. So bringing them into community is incredibly important for their health and well-being.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Mike. I live in Berkshire, and I'm an associate member of the Lee Abbey community in Devon. I've just been hearing a talk earlier today which reminded me something I really believe in, is that we all need community to be resilient in times of turmoil and disruption in the climate, in the world, in all kinds of ways. We need community for resilience.
What was your name again? Hi, I'm Carolyn from Australia. I'm interested in how communities knit new people in and deal with conflict, and how that helps communities last the distance and stay together, and also how you form less formal communities just with your neighbours.
Thank you, Carolyn. Wow, what a wonderful collection. We are here, let me just write down Carolyn's name so I don't forget. We're here to share a little bit about the Iona community, but that, I hope, illustrates the breadth of the wisdom in the room and the yearning in the room and the curiosity in the room and the potential in the room, therefore, in the tent, to find ways to strategize around community so that we together can make the world, can transform the world. We're not here for the survival of the Iona community. The Iona community has come and it will go at some stage. We are here to be part of God's community of hope, community of resilience and hope. Mike, I'm going to use that word and I'm going to come back to it. Because we live in a time that is particular to us, it is not unique, but our particularity is the climate catastrophe. Our particularity is the breakdown of society into hugely stratospherically distanced groups in our societies, the rich, the uber rich, and the remarkably poor, and so on. We have many challenges in front of us. Our task is a particular task incarnate in our days today, and we in the Iona community believe we have got a little glimpse of what we find really hopeful. So just a brief word about the Iona community for those who don't know about it. Founded nearly 80 years ago in 1938 in Glasgow, so really nothing to do with Iona initially. Our founder was a guy called George MacLeod, who was a minister in the Govan part of Glasgow, which is where the shipbuilding had in the 1930s been burgeoning, and then the industry collapsed with the global economic crash. At that same time, recovering from First World War trauma, society was also knowing that there was preparation for a further war. And into that space, MacLeod was aware that the people around him in Govan, who could not put clothes on their children or shoes on their children's feet or enough food in their bellies, were not interested in what the church was saying, but needed to be transformed by what church folk could do. And so he began an enterprise to revolutionize the church. And he began with asking, how can we train Presbyterian Church of Scotland clergy to be much more engaged with the needs of the people on the streets of places like Govan? And to do that, he also knew that there was a ruined Benedictine monastery on the island of Iona. The Abbey Church, the sanctuary, had been rebuilt by the Duke of Argyll in 1910, I believe, but the living quarters to the north of the Abbey Church were in a ruin. And he took to Iona over a series of summers trainee clergy and skilled craftspeople from across Scotland, and lived with them in community while they rebuilt literally the walls of Iona Abbey. Those individuals, George's plan was not to create a community like we have it today. He wanted to revolutionise the way we trained clergy. Those people said, when we go back from Iona, we want to continue this sense of being connected to one another. We, the clergy, have learned about how hard the labourers work, and we've learned also, the labourers have learned that the clergy don't just work on a Sunday, which is what they believed of each other. We've shared our money together. We've shared prayer. We've shared the stuff of life. We eat together. We share the floor space in the little library. Has anyone been into the little library in Iona Abbey? A tiny little library. That was the only room in the living quarters that had a roof on it in those early days. And they all had to sleep very close together. There was no other choice. They had to live together in community. They were all men. I think they were all white men. And half of them were student ministers. The other half were labourers. They were a very particular demography. We are quite different from that now, which is a good thing. But they had a very particularity then. And so they said, when we go back to our lives not on Iona, we would like to maintain some rhythm of this life back in mostly the central belt of Scotland. And so the rule of life began. They had shared the common life in the guddle and the mess and the chaos of a building site, with a very clear common task. Note to self, a demanding and clear common task, MacLeod would say, alone builds community. That was one of our catchphrases. A demanding common task, alone builds community, which came from those early days, that you have to know what it is you're doing and why you're doing it. They wanted to maintain that sense of common life around a common task while they were not on Iona. And so they began to commit to praying together, and they committed to talking with one another about the stuff of life while they were back in their mainland lives. For these many of these men, their good women folk then got involved and said, hang on a minute, you can't start talking about how you're going to spend your money without talking to me about this. So very early on, the women, and it was very sexist in the early days, we would now recognise, but the women took their voice and said, you cannot continue to talk about community unless you involve those with whom you live in community in the everyday, ordinary lives of the world. And so our rule of life evolved, kind of in a nice synergy balance to the common life that was shared on the island. So the rule of life that we maintain now is a fourfold rule. The first one is a commitment to daily prayer and reflection. The second one is a commitment to, I get two and three often the wrong way, and it doesn't actually matter. Two is working for justice, peace, reconciliation and wholeness. Number three is committing to accounting with one another for the way we use our time, our money, our gifts and the earth's resources. That notion of accounting, it's not about judging or delineating. It's about listening carefully and talking really deeply and honestly about what we do with our money and how we give away 10% of our disposable income, which many of you and millions of people across the globe do with no connection to us. And then the fourth rule is a commitment to sharing in the corporate or the incarnate life of our community. So getting involved in running our community. And on my right, I have people who have recently lived the common life in Iona Abbey, and others who have made a commitment to the rule of life. And so I'm going to invite some of you guys up, and then we're going to re-engage with some of the questions that you shared. So that's the plan. I've said a bit about the community. We've heard a bit about what you're thinking. We're going to have some wisdom from the floor, and then we're going to see any more questions or thoughts. And then we're going to meet back here again next year, and we're going to report back how we've done a year on. Okay, I'm going to invite Miriam first of all. Miriam, do you want to come and join me? Miriam, I've known you since you were very wee, and it's great that you're here. Thank you for coming. And you were with us about 4 weeks ago on Iona for Community Week, which is when all the members and their families gather. I wanted to ask you, Miriam, what was it that first, how come you're part of the Iona community? How does that happen? What first brought you to Iona?
Well, obviously my parents had
looking
a
at your mother
part, yeah, had a big part to do with it. She's a member. And so I spent many summers in Iona. But I think the way that I really became part of the Iona community was the Palestinian attack on Israel in October 2023. I was very connected to that and I got, to be honest, a bit depressed. The Iona community helped me a lot through that, and knowing that people that had the same values as me, that shared what was happening in a joyful way and a way through humour, really meant a lot to me, and they've been doing that ever since, and that is what has connected me to it, justice and peace.
Thank you, Miriam. So I think a round of applause. Yeah. Maybe ask a second. Put it a bit closer to you now. I'm told that if you think you're a pop star, hold it like that, Miriam, as if you're a pop star. That is a really good way to speak to the microphone. The second question I wanted to ask you is, you've said a bit about what gives you the joy. Do you want to say any more about, you know, what is it about the Iona community? Actually, you've probably answered that question. Did you answer both my questions there? The other one was about what makes you feel really connected to the community now.
Yeah, well, I think all the values, faith is a major one, and hope. They've given me faith and hope through everything they do. The sense of community at the Abbey is so strong. We eat together, we share meals together, we go on pilgrimages all together. And I feel so inspired every single time I go there. And so, yeah, I just think everyone in the community is so amazing. And Ruth is so amazing as well, because her challenge is a very, very difficult role to play. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Thank you. That's my little plug for me. Thank you, Miriam, so much. And Miriam is a great example of the wisdom of our younger people who come and help us understand ourselves with inspiration and insight and focus. I want to invite Becca. And is Bex here?
Yeah, hi.
Becca and Bex, do you want to come and join me? Because Becca and Bex have both just recently returned from Iona as volunteers. And I wanted to ask you both, kind of similar to what I asked Miriam. You may sit down if you want to. I'm going to give you the mic.
Yeah.
Share a little bit about what it was like to be a volunteer with the Iona community, living that common life that I was describing. Maybe say a bit about the high points, the joys, and maybe something about the challenges. And you've got about as long as you like.
An hour then. Yeah.
An hour then.
So I'm Bex. So I've been volunteering on Iona for the last 3 months. I moved there from central London and I'd been working up in a busy central London A&E up until that point. So to say it was a bit of a change would be an understatement. I think in terms of highs, I think one of the things that was actually mentioned in the initial discussions around intergenerational living, I think that was one of the things that really struck me as something that I hadn't experienced before. When I arrived, I was sharing a house with 8 other volunteers. The age range in that house went from 18 to 79. So I've not experienced that. I've never had the opportunity to even live with my own grandparents. So to live across that range and to gain experience from that was really valuable. I think echoing what Miriam just said about being with people who share your values and sharing that common interest and the common life was really important. As a queer person, it was also really valuable to me to be able to meet older LGBTQ plus folk and learn from their experiences. It's not something I've found space to do otherwise, and particularly finding people who've stuck through faith even in difficult times for that community. Just looking at my phone for my notes. I think living in community, you definitely relate to people in different ways. I found myself, as I left, realizing that I'd really come to a sense of knowing people and also feeling known, and that's something which it can be really hard to find in our society. In terms of the lows, I think one of the struggles was the busyness. So I volunteered in the kitchen and in housekeeping. It was a busy day to day, a lot of serving the guests, which was a joy sometimes and also frustrating at other times. Particularly around meal times, I would often not have long to talk to people, and that meant that you had lots of snatched conversations and it was difficult to find space to go deeper. And I think one of the key things I've taken away is how important it is to create those spaces. Even when you're surrounded by people, you still need to create spaces. And amongst volunteers, we were able to do a bit of that, creating that space to engage more with issues that we care about and to be able to go a bit deeper. And I think that was some of the most valuable things I've done.
Thank you so much, Bex.
Hi, I'm Becca. I'm 28 from Glasgow. I've had long-time family connections with the Abbey and the island, but this is the first time I volunteered. Someone mentioned about being autistic in community. So I'm autistic. And this was probably the thing that was at the forefront of my mind going into it. I've never been able to sort of make and keep friendships, and I found when I was younger it was really difficult to find communities that felt like I had somewhere where I was accepted for who I was, for where I belonged. And obviously, you know, living for 2.5 months in a house of strangers at the beginning, and in a very confined space with lots of people where socialising would be a huge part of it was a quite daunting concept at first. But I have found that I have felt the safest I've ever felt on Iona, both physically, because the island is manageable in terms of people and just how to get around. You don't have that kind of sensory overload of being in the city and things like that. But also, I've found a group of people who are of a similar age and similar life experience, which I haven't had before. I'm at university at the moment, so I'm with people who are quite a bit younger than me. So this has been really nice to be able to connect with people of a similar age and similar life experience. And I felt that I've just been accepted for who I was and where I was in life at that time. What else to say? I have found that I've always struggled to kind of find a community, and I've grasped onto lots of different things and nothing stuck. And I felt like this has stuck more than a lot of other places. And that's been really lovely. And I'm hoping it will continue in the future.
Thank you so much, Becca and Bex. And if you want to, I mean, I'm going to carry on now and hear from some more, but we might come back to you. But I'm aware, Sadie, you asked that question about autism. Did you want to maybe, I don't know, connect with Becca at the end? And because that was a powerful testimony. I'm very grateful to you, Becca. And to Bex. For now, thank you both. Thank you. Can this come over? I'm wondering, because you're all, there's four of you sitting at the back there on some seats already. So can I just pass the mic along that back row if it'll stretch and just ask Ali, Pete, Marie, and Jane to say a little bit about the rule of life. Because we've heard about Becca and Bex, and from Miriam also, about what it's like to live in Iona Abbey. These folks have made a commitment to the fourfold rule of life. And I wonder, just a couple of sentences or a couple of thoughts, Pete, and introduce yes. yourselves.
Yeah, I'm Pete. I'm the token man. It just dawned on me as we
two,
sat
you know?
Here. There are other men in the community. Oh, I can see one over there.
Give us a wave.
Yes. I don't think we're an endangered species yet. The rule attracted me. The first thing about it, actually, that I found different when I came across it after visiting the Abbey a few times, the one that challenged me the most was the one about accounting, because I've got lots of good friends in churches and people that I lived in at home in sort of loose community with, but we never talked about money, and we never talked about how we used our time. And it's not something that is exclusive to the Iona community, and it certainly would be possible for anyone to do it, anyone else. But because it gave having that rule gave a structure to it and set a timetable to think you need to look through your finances, where your money's gone, every year, was I found a really helpful discipline to do. People sort of take a look at me a bit funny when we say things like that, but actually the process of sitting down and looking at it is not something that springs naturally to someone like me. I'm completely chaotic and disorganized about most things, and money is no exception to that. But because there's a rule, it gives me permission to do that and encourages me to do it. And actually, to expand on what you mentioned about it, we talk about how we give away a certain amount, but actually, what the other part of it is that we look at how we spend the bit that we keep. That's the other challenge, to think about where money goes, and it's quite an enlightening. If any of you ever tried it, you probably find it a bit of a surprise as well, and I certainly have. I would challenge people to have a think about that, but that's something that I have really appreciated.
Thank you. I wonder, just pass it on to Ali, and just we're going to take maybe one brief kind of cameo of living the rules, so we get voices, because we'll include Karen as well, yeah. And then we'll come back to the questions.
I think for me, it's meeting together. I'm a people person. I feel that society is really polarized, and the more I look at social media, I only get posts from people who are saying similar things. Mm-hmm. And I think if that's dividing society. So the fact that we meet together in, we call them family groups, in a locality, you do not choose those people. They are simply the people who live closest to you, is a challenge, so that we can have robust disagreements and arguments. But we get up, and when we're at the Abbey, we pass the marmalade because we have breakfast together in the morning. So what holds us together is more important than the differences. And that perhaps is what I value most.
Thank you. And I think that might speak to who was talking about conflict. How do you manage some of the conflictual times? Was it Mike as well? But yeah, over here, Carolyn, that we have the happenstance of our locales, which means we don't get to choose who we are with. It's the members who live in a certain postcode district. And then we work hard at learning the skills of how to listen carefully, not needing to always agree with one another, but absolutely needing to understand one another. And if we don't understand, we have to find a really good, curious question. And that is on us to find the question. And that is really, really hard work. And if we want to ask for peace in the world, we have to model it within our community. We cannot pay lip service to that vocation. And so we do work hard, and we fail constantly at finding that peace, but we also are growing better at it. It's not an answer to the big question, but it's a glimpse about how we manage it. Marie, tell us one thing about what the rule means to you.
I've never joined anything because I would never make the commitment to follow whatever it was. And I joined the community in a particular place because it had a rule, and it was a rule, and it freed me to explore. Particularly picking up on what you've just said, Ruth, is to listen to things that we don't agree with, which has not always been my forte. And I think to learn the language of listening and to try and hear against the backdrop of our rule. And our rule is about our faith, about how we spend our time. And that's the framework against which I think about the rule every single day.
Thank you, Marie. Pass on to Jane, and then we'll have Karen and Sarah if you want to as well.
Hi, I'm Jane. Just very briefly, the part of the rule around prayer. So I pray every morning the liturgy of the Iona community, and we also pray for each other sort of on rotation. So we pray, every single member of the community is prayed for every month, and all associate members every quarter. And that's very powerful. And just very cheekily, a second one is the commitment to social justice. I'm a prison chaplain, and I'm no longer able to demonstrate whilst I'm in this role, but my family group goes on demonstrations and they hold me because I feel I want to be on that demonstration. So when I can't be there, my community are there sort of on my behalf and praying for me and supporting me in the choice I've made to be a prison chaplain.
Thanks, Jane. The family groups that Jane and Ali have mentioned are our local groups. We call them a family group, and clusters of family groups form regions, and regions have regional gatherings, and we are global. So you'll find family groups in the USA and in Australia and across Europe, and you'll find regions growing in these parts of the world. Karen, you've just come back from being a volunteer. Are you still there? Although you're here. Yeah. And you're on the new members program, so yeah. You're a bit of both.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. My introduction to the Iona community was about eight or 9 years ago. I went up with my church, stayed for the week, thought, oh, that was lovely, went home. And then about a year later, after suffering burnout at work and thinking, what do I need to do? And a friend suggested, they asked me, what did I want to do? I said, I just want to be on a desert island somewhere. So the two islands that I knew of were Iona and Holy Island. I'd lived near Holy Island, so I knew that there wasn't much work there, but it gave me this little earworm. I went home, opened the computer, and they were recruiting for that year for the staff. So I went up for a year to be a bookings and finance and admin person and stayed for 4 years. I've now been off island 3 years, which has given me the time to be part of a family group to see things when the community's scattered rather than when it's gathered on island.
You're in the same family group as Fidge.
Yeah, Fidge is in my family group. It's the first time I've seen her since I've been here because we keep missing meetings. Each of us, I miss it as well, Fidge. So that's been great. So I've seen the community all round. So I've been an associate member for about 7 years now, and this year I'm going to enter into the new members programme and find out what, over the next 2 years, what being a full member, the guys behind me and over here, what that's like. As part of the community as well, we have a Lectio Divina that some of us have put together. So I see Diane over there sometimes on a Sunday evening on Zoom. And there was another thing. No, it might have been family groups.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you can start at one level and you never know where it's going to go to. So,
and just while you're passing that to Sarah, just the entry point for anyone who's interested is a click on our website or a chat to one of us, and you can immediately become what we call an associate member. And then you're immediately caught up in our regional structure. And if you then want to become what we call a hallowed member or somebody who takes the vow, you then go through a 2-year discernment process, which is what Karen's at the beginning of. It's starting in a couple of weeks at Minster Acres Retreat Centre near Durham. We're going to have about 30 of us on retreat. And it's a 2-year discernment process focusing on the four aspects of the rule. We do a deep dive into each of those four over 6 months for each aspect of the rule, at the end of which, if you still feel called to membership, then we host a special service called a hallowing service when we welcome you or bless you or halo you into membership. And in this very tent this morning, is Martin here? We hallowed Martin Haworth as a new member of the Iona community. He had been on jury service at the hallowing time in Glasgow early the year. And we said, well, how about hallowing you at Greenbelt? You've been coming here for years. And so we had this most amazing little service here. But that's the route into membership. And every year a member will decide to renew their membership. It's an annual membership. And every year in May, March to May, you're invited as a member to renew your commitment. And it's perfectly fine to say, thank you, but no thanks. I'm going to not commit again this year. We recognise that it's a transient thing sometimes. Last but not least, Sarah.
Thanks, Ruth. Yeah, I'm Sarah. I'm in the Iona community. I live just outside Glasgow. Hello. It's lovely to be with you all. I just wanted to add to what everyone's been saying as well in terms of the different parts of the rule. Certainly the most important part bringing me into the community was the second one about action for social justice and peace, the commitment to ending weapons of mass destruction through our statement that we have against Trident and nuclear weapons, and then also the statement in support of a unified Israel-Palestine where everyone's has equal rights. And I think my daughter Miriam alluded to that a few years ago when this phase of the genocide really got going. It was very difficult to find other spaces, or we felt, where we could really bring that hurt and anger and try and grapple with what's happening and how, where do we go from here. And I find that the members that I've met in the Iona community and volunteers and staff as well at the Abbey have been tremendously inspiring to me. So they're really living out their faith. And that's what drew me into the community, because it was actually people enacting that social justice and not just talking and singing about it, which is very powerful as well, and also brought me into the community through John Bell and Graham Moore's songs and Wild Goose Resource Group. And that was really important for me as well. And then we did something about it. And people's expressions of that are very, very different. And I have been in the very privileged position for a couple of years of helping to answer members' letters. So every year, one of the commitments for the members is that they write to the leader about how they keep this fourfold rule. And there's, of course, an incredible variety about how people do so, and that's okay. You know, we do have these shared values that people have talked about, but people express that in many, many different actions and ways. And then someone was talking about the intergenerational. That's been very powerful as well. I grew up in a great church in Edinburgh where it was intergenerational, but I didn't find another space after that where there was that glorious mix of people and wisdom. And in the Iona community, I found that. And so just to say that much as I'm talking about people active for social justice and peace, there are many, many members of our society, who our community, who are older, or who for other reasons are more contemplative or prayerful in their commitment to justice and peace, and that's okay as well. So
thank you so much, Sarah, and you have prompted me to I have one other special guest to share with you, which is my friend on my left. Fiona Haworth is a member of our community also in East Anglia. And Fiona is particularly involved in one of our Common Concern Networks, maybe more. But I wonder if you just say a little bit about the CCNs, the Common Concern Networks. If our rule of life kind of pegs us like a tent with its pegs and its guidelines, if our rule of life connects us geographically to the ground and you don't get a choice about who you're with, our common concern networks weave across the way, and you can choose where you put your passions. And like any good bit of cloth, you need both the warp and the weft. And so we are stronger because we have the happenstance of our family group and we have the choice of our common concern networks. And Fiona, do you want to say a bit about those?
Yeah, we have 9 common concern networks, and I'm not going to try and list them all because I will forget some of them, I'm sure. And the number has been evolving as members and associate members have come to the community and say, this is an area we're particularly interested in and we think that we need to work in that area. And the other thing I would say quickly about keeping the rule, we keep the rule as a community. We don't keep it as individuals because we can't all do all of it. So it's a community rule that we keep, and we all play our parts in keeping the rule of the community. So when Jane was speaking about people demonstrating on her behalf because she can't, that's part of that wonderful holding that the community does. I'm a member of the CCN Community Concern Network for Israel-Palestine. There's a number of us. We have members in America, so we meet online. Finding time is difficult, but we manage it, and we share our interest and our passion, and we do very practical things as well. So we have written the community position statement on Israel-Palestine, which is available on the website. We're involved in many different aspects of campaigning and activism, Israel-Palestine as well. And we've also we organised a week in Iona Abbey. We were particularly keen to showcase Palestinian voices because we very seldom hear Palestinian voices in the church in the UK. So we had two Palestinian speakers, a Jewish speaker, the Palestinians, Christian and a Muslim. And we're planning another week next year with a Palestinian speaker, two speakers, and we're also looking at something, doing something in 2028. So it's a way of us reaching out and enabling people who are often denied a platform or find it very difficult to find one in this country to speak to us so that we can learn from them.
So let's have a game about the nine CCNs. Let's see if we can remember them all. Poverty and inequality, Israel-Palestine, environment, eco, LGBTQIA+, faith and spirituality, challenging racism, interfaith. No, there's not. Peace and reconciliation. I've done poverty, faith and spirituality. There's another one. We'll remember it. Anyway. Refugees and migration. So in this little booklet, and these leaflets, you'll find them. But again, we're not, you know, there are many people that do this. Pilsden folks, you know, I'm sure there's many familiar things here. Lee Abbey folks, you know, we do familiar, similar things to yourselves. We know that there used to be a book and an online resource called Diggers and Dreamers, which you can look to. If you're looking to find a community near you that has similar values, look there or ask the folks around here. There's the Pilsden and Othona, both have little pop-up spaces. There's Mike, who's got a Lee Abbey connection here. There's all of us from Iona. Come and ask us if you're looking for a connection with a community. What our community, part of our particularity is this, both we're gathered and scattered. So we gather on Iona regularly, we gather in other places as members in what we call plenary gatherings, but mostly we're scattered and we meet in our local communities. So if you live in Macclesfield, then there's a community near you, a network of members near you. If you live in Cumbria, Alison and I will welcome you to our Cumbria family group, because that's where we happen to be. We might have chosen each other, Alison, but we didn't get to choose each other. It's quite a happy little collaboration there. There are other... If you're in Yorkshire and you're hanging out where Tom is, you'll be around where Tom is. If you're in Texas, you'll meet Sarah Lee. How amazing that would be. So we are a scattered community. I wanted to come back to a couple of the things that were shared earlier. And then I want to see if anyone else has other thoughts about that. Back to Miriam and others, Bex and Becca, others too. Somebody talked about, Claire, you talked about how to be open, not to become, where's Claire? Not to become insular, not a club. I don't know how we do that, because in a sense, you know, we have found each other because we have shared values. We will, however, as you heard Ali say, have differences within that. And my goodness, we do have different views about things. The question I have is, what's the quality of the way we differ? How do we display really good managing of difference? And that is, for me, the essence. You can have... group of people who all say they believe the same things, but they don't ever talk about it. And so you have these kind of unspoken sideways conversations where things come out sideways and you discover that you don't all necessarily agree, even though you've said you do. What we try to do is raise to the surface those areas where we actually have differences and celebrate those. So you might say, you know, we are a values-driven charity and membership organization, therefore we will all have broadly similar beliefs. But actually, what marks us out, I hope, is the quality of our conversations when we do find we differ. I don't know if you want to respond to any of that or expand on your question.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was my question.
Wasn't your... Okay. Well, there we are. What was your question? How do you stop being insular?
Let me just put this through the microphone. So it's sometimes it, what you're saying is, how do we make space? You know, when there's a kind of tautology that when we're in, and when and therefore there's an we don't we I'm part of a Quaker community where we think we're a very welcoming community, but the total blind spot is the people who don't feel welcome are not here. So of course we all feel that we're really good at it. So is that kind of get yeah? We're also pretty rubbish at that. But we are aware that it happens, and the best we can do is take that awareness into a place of action and ask those who are on the edges, tell us how to be better at that. How do you, how, what's your answer to your own question? And maybe take the mic or come here.
I think the answer is there isn't a tidy answer. Yeah. And there are as many answers as there are people on the edge of things. I would sit in several fringe groups who are often left out of things. And so as a trainee church leader, that's quite an interesting perspective. And I've also been part of a Quaker community that thought it was really welcoming and wasn't. So it's been quite eye-opening. And I think part of it is about asking people what they need to make them feel welcome and able to come in. But it's then listening to what people say. Yes. I think we've got better at asking what people need, but I don't think we've yet got to the point where we're always very good at then. We tend to be, we can be quite defensive when they then tell us things that are uncomfortable. So I think it's how we deal with our own discomfort as much as it is about how we deal with difference. But I agree, disagreeing well is really important.
Perfect. Thank you, Claire. We are going to wrap up. Just to say, I only use the Quakers as an example because that's the church community I belong to. It happens in every single denomination that I know of. And Quakers are brilliantly welcoming to Quaker friends in the room. We all have blind spots. A couple of things to say. Alongside our common concern networks, we also have a disability support group. We call, and they form themselves into a family group, and they're called the Six Pack Spirits Family Group. So that's a really important development in our life and community. And we also have a neurodiversity support group, which meets online. One of the gifts, if there were any, but one of the gifts of COVID was our discovery that online community actually does work. It's different, and it's but it's not just a stopgap. And we are open as a community, I would hope, to continuing to respond to the needs of our members who say, please can we have a space to get together to do this? So a contemplative practice group has recently emerged. A wild church reflective group has also just emerged. So we have our formal networks, but we also allow pop-up community. Can I just close by saying thank you to all of those who took to the stage and the seats. Thank you to all of you. We have recently just received we have an annual Iona Community Lecture, and this year Josie Gwynn gave the Iona Community Lecture in Paisley, and it was on resilience and hope in community. And Mike, I know you're lying down, but I'm speaking straight to you. It's quite all right, stay there. Because she's just writing a PhD based at Edinburgh University Theology Faculty on resilience, and she and her partner run something called the Resilience Resource, and they work all over the world offering insights into how to be resilient communities. And she used the Iona community as her example in her PhD for what it means to develop rituals that are effective and long-lasting and offer signs of hope and resilience to the world. And she said, religious communities like the Iona community, like Lee Abbey, like Pilsden, and most of our churches are developing wonderfully strong and resilient rituals that give meaning and substance and depth to life that we lose at our peril, because these are the rituals that build, and these are sociological theories out there that back this up. Read her lecture, or listen to her lecture. These are the rituals that can build resilient communities in the face of all that is to come. And she called it, I needed to write it down, there's a theory called interactive ritual chain theory, that when you develop rituals and put them into chains, interactive rituals, when people react together and are develop rituals together, like worship or the way we welcome one another, these chains become stronger and stronger over time. And we loosen them and we let go of them at our peril. That doesn't mean they become atrophied. They need to be malleable.
And she said, if you can't remember interactive ritual chain theory, think of the notion of collective effervescence. I leave you with that as we go into the world to bring hope and resilience, peace with justice to the world. Let us be together a sign of collective effervescence in the world, whichever kind of community you are already part of or belong to. And we have been that here today. Thank you, one and all.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.